Welcome. Calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:07 p.m. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Ledoux. Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Tuck. Representative Josephson.
Here.
Representative Knopf.
Here.
Representative Wohl.
Here.
Representative Pop, Sheriff
Price-Tompkins. Here. Thank you, Martha, as always, is today's secretary, and Kelsey Goodell with the LIO today for helping out. Please silence any cell phones, and a reminder that we have a finance subcommittee today, University of Alaska, at 4:30 p.m. We'll try to end a respectable amount of time before that. There are two items on today's agenda, plus a third carrying over from the previous hearing, so the order will proceed today is House Bill 3, which we heard previous committee hearing relating to National Guard leave and reemployment rights, and we'll follow that with House Bill 20, a first hearing from Representative Klayman relating to the solemnization of marriage by elected officials, and that will be succeeded by House Concurrent Resolution 5 from Representative Eastman relating to uniform rules and the Committee on Committees. We'll start off with House Bill 3, and I previously noted I intended to move this bill from committee today with the support of the committee, barring any objections or further perspective on this bill, and wanted to bring a presenter from the bill sponsor's office forward and to see if there were any further questions for the bill sponsor today, having had the opportunity to hear this 2 days ago. Are there any further questions? Yes, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. I think this came up late in the meeting last time, and there was maybe some confusion, so I'll ask the question again, and you can set the record straight. This bill covers those people who are Alaskan residents who are also members of a National Guard in another state, but they must be Alaska residents. Is that correct?
Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Chris Tuck, and to the chair, Representative Wohl, thank you for bringing this up. I did want to clarify. So if you look at page 1 of the bill, line 8 and 9, what we're including is a resident of the state and a member of the National Guard of another state to perform active National Guard service under that state law. So it is a resident of Alaska who might be serving in another National Guard, so when they get called to service, they have those reemployment rights.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Any further comments or questions? And seeing none, our vice chair is not here today, had other meetings to attend to, is also happens to be the bill sponsor. Is there a motion from the committee, Representative Knopf?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to House Bill 3 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, House Bill 3 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, and we'll take a brief at ease to do the paperwork. Who is joining us in person, and Representative Wohl, we briefly gaveled it, and also I believe recently celebrated a birthday. Might have been yesterday, if I remember correctly. So, happy birthday, Deputy Commissioner Dole, and thank you for respect, Representative Birch.
I just want to thank you for being here and for your support of this and support for our men and women in the Guard that are doing such great work for Alaska and the nation. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Okay, back to ease to do the paperwork. One bill down, two to go. Next up is House Bill 20 from Representative Klayman relating to marriage solemnization and elected officials. Representative Klayman, would you please identify yourself and introduce the bill?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, State Representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage, and I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 20 today. In financially challenging times like we face today, I'm reminded that part of our role as elected government officials is to reduce red tape and make government accessible to the public. In introducing this bill, I'd like to make marriage more easily accessible. This bill will allow couples to have their marriages solemnized directly by elected officials. It allows us to be the friendly face of government while providing a service to the public. Finally, being able to perform a marriage would be a privilege, and we would be fortunate to have the opportunity. With that, I will turn it over to my staff member, Sarah Perman, who will explain the bill to you further.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Perman, AIDS Representative Clayman, and I wanted to also take the time to say thank you for hearing House Bill 20 today. Briefly, House Bill 20 takes two statutes within the Alaska Marriage Code and amends them to add language that allows for marriages to be solemnized by elected officials of the state of Alaska. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 2505-261A that relates to who may solemnize a marriage. Currently, the statute reads that marriage may be solemnized by a minister, priest, rabbi, or commissioned officer of the Salvation Army, a marriage commissioner or judicial officer, or before or in any religious organization or congregation. House Bill 20 adds language to include an individual holding an elective public office in the state of Alaska to that statute. Section 2 is amended to include language that reads that a marriage solemnized by elected officials is considered valid. The purpose behind this bill is really to make marriage accessible for all Alaskans. We recognize that marriage opens several doors, from providing access to health care for one's spouse or from providing eligibility for family medical leave. There are over 1,100 places in federal laws and programs where being married really makes a difference. We believe that this bill is a family first bill. It allows people to receive greater benefits that are good for all Alaskans. In addition to that, House Bill 20 also allows elected officials to be good stewards of government. It allows elected officials to interact on a one-on-one basis with constituents, providing a service that has a long-lasting impact on each of these constituents. The Alaska Marriage Code currently allows anyone to apply for a marriage commissioner appointment, but there's a $25 fee in addition to it's a time-consuming process. You have to first go over to Department of Health and Social Services, apply for a marriage license, and then go over to the court and apply for this marriage commissioner appointment. So this is a route that simplifies and makes it really easy. You just directly address your officials, and they can say yes and conduct it following that. It also applies to couples who might not be affiliated with particular religious institutions. They're able to ask an elected official rather than have to apply for a marriage commissioner appointment. They can just directly approach someone that they know who's an elected official and have that done. And lastly, one of the places that this really makes a difference is in smaller towns or rural areas with somewhat limited resources. For example, if the minister in a small town becomes ill, you can ask your elected official to step in and conduct it on the spot. So, with that being said, the Department of Health and Social Services has assigned a zero fiscal note to this bill. And we think it may also remove a financial cost to citizens who would otherwise be paying the $25 for the marriage commissioner appointment. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Birch.
Thank you. I was unaware that this was an issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. However, having gone and signed up to be an authorizing person, I guess the question would be: remind me what the, if you will, what the sequence is. Now, do you have to have a marriage license? I mean, is there a marriage license that's separate from this particular ability to solemnize a marriage? I mean.
Through the chair to Representative Birch, are you referring just to the marriage commissioner appointment, or are you referring to all marriages?
Well, okay, no. Assuming that you have a duty and a responsibility as an elected official, if were this the pass, to solemnize a marriage, I'm trying to understand what exactly that means. Does that mean that you sign in the dotted line? If I remember right, there's like a couple signatures, the bride and the groom, and then a signature in the bottom. Do you have to make sure? Do you have a duty and a responsibility to make sure that the paperwork's in order and that the license application is properly processed, or what sort of duty is involved?
I'd like to defer that to Representative Clayman.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, there's a two-step process. You would first go to the Department of Health and Human Services to get the marriage license, but they don't.
Who goes?
People getting married.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So,
not the person.
No, not the elected official.
Okay.
So, let's to make it on a say my daughter wanted to get married, so she would go with her partner or her spouse-to-be and go get a license and then come to, then they would need to get somebody to solemnize or basically perform the marriage ceremony.
Right.
And I think that, I don't think you'd have a duty to make sure the paperwork was correct. You'd just sign in the blank that says the person officiating.
Okay.
And if you'd gotten a, if you had gotten a one-day marriage certificate that allows you to be a marriage commissioner for one day, then you would have, you would attach that certificate that gives you that one-day authority. You would then attach that to the marriage license that you sign. I've never done this, but I assume the people getting married have to sign it too.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a witness signature, and then the officiant or whoever, you know, solemnizes the event. Great. Okay. Thank you.
And I have a question for the sponsor. Would this be all elected office holders down to, say, school board members?
To the chair, yes. All public elected officials within the state, holding a public office within the state of Alaska.
And has there been, could that be construed, for instance, to include tribal council members or... Is there need for further definition?
The question of tribal officials, we actually didn't research that. I think the way it's crafted is that a person who is, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Klayman through the chair, or to the chair, the way it's, if somebody is there by virtue of being elected, then they would be eligible to perform the service. And of course, if somebody was appointed to fill an elective seat but actually hadn't been through the elective because that is an elective office, that person, too, could perform the function.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
So I'm not sure about this exactly. I've officiated some marriages, right? And it was simple enough because they people showed up. I mean, this was as mayor, right? Excuse me. Through the chair, and I apologize. But they showed up with a form, and then I signed it, and off they go. So I guess my question is, if I'm an elected official, and I am given the right to, or the duty, I don't know, can I say I'm elected now, but I really don't want to have this privilege?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, yes. In Section 1, the very first subset says marriages may be solemnized, may rather than shall, and it gives you the opportunity to say, I'm not interested. Is that what you were?
So I wouldn't have the title of marriage officiant or marriage or
solemnization agent.
through the chair, I believe that is correct. You would not have that title and you would not be obliged to do so.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear on the record. I do have a letter of opposition, and that was the concern was that if it could be construed, that's one of the concerns, could be construed as a duty to solemnize a marriage. And I'm just making it clear for the record that this does not make it a duty of an elected official to solemnize a marriage.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I do not see this as creating a duty. It becomes something that you can choose to do if somebody asks you, but it's not something that you're required to do, which is why the language says may. And it's actually in the context of the First Amendment rights, there's it's very clear that religious officials can decline to perform marriages for both religious and any other reasons. If they don't, for example, Catholic priests often decline to marry people because one of them was divorced previously and the church has not annulled that marriage. And there's a number of, and Jewish rabbis routinely will not marry couples if one of the people getting married is actually not Jewish. So there's a long history of people being allowed to decline. So it doesn't create a duty to perform the function to the extent. And there have been some questions to the extent that there might be needed to be slightly more clarity that an elected official cannot be compelled to perform a ceremony that they don't want to. I wouldn't have a problem with clarifying language saying that. I know when we had discussions, I didn't want to get in the place of trying to, in statute, write in First Amendment protections and describe them in great detail in the statute, because the First Amendment is what it is, and it's not really our job to try to write that in the statute, but to the extent it would help to make it clear that an elected official would not be, could not be compelled to perform a marriage ceremony, I don't think I would have a problem with some additional language in the stat, in this bill saying that.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it wouldn't be that if someone came and said, we would like you to solemnize a marriage, to perform the marriage, you wouldn't have to give a reason that you don't want to do it. You didn't have to say, we don't want to do it because of this, we don't want to do it because of that. It's like, I don't fit it into my schedule or whatever it is. I mean, there's no expectation that an elected official will be performing marriages and have to say why they wouldn't, or I mean, you know, so they don't have to. We don't have to get into the detail of why, you know, we might not want to do a marriage. That's the question.
Through the chair, I would not expect there would be any reason necessary. It could be, I'm sorry, I'm walking the dog that day, or I'll be in Hawaii, or I'm not the right person to perform this marriage. Have a great day.
And for the sake of clarity, my understanding of your question, Representative Johnson, is pretty clearly no. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, the answer is no. There's no requirement to explain.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in your opening statement, there was a lot of nice words about how marriage enhances our community, or our beauty of marriage and all that stuff, which is great, and I support that. Is there a shortage? Is there like, geez, I want to get married, but, you know, the judges are sick, and the rabbi won't marry me because I'm not Jewish, and, you know, is there a shortage? Like, I can't find anyone to marry me. We're not really addressing that kind of issue, correct? I'm addressing this to the the person who said the opening statement.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Representative Wall, this is Sarah Perman for the record. I think you're asking, is there a shortage of people who are available to perform this? And because, if that is the case, I will say likely no, because there is the option to apply for a marriage commissioner appointment. But we are of the opinion that this, as a simplification of that, because you have to pay $25 to get that, and this is just one alternate route that makes it slightly easier.
Follow up?
I guess that's what I thought you were getting at. So in other words, if you want to get married and you don't want to go to a judge or anyhow, or if your friend happens to be a legislator or a city council or school board or any of those possible elected officials, then you could say, hey, why don't you marry me this weekend? You don't have to do any paperwork. I got the license. Let's just do this. I guess my only concern, which is not very big, but similar, Representative Johnson, is that let's say someone's trying to get married and the justice of the peace is, if they even have them up here, I'm not sure, but the judge is sick and all that, and they go, well, you know, you can ask a state elected official, and someone comes, calls the representative up and says, hey, I need to get married today. My priest is sick. And I see that you're eligible, and they might interpret that as this is your public duty, this is your obligation as an elected official, even though it's not stated that, and even though you do have the option to say no, hey, someone's in their office, go knock on the door, they'll do it, and I don't know, I guess I understand that concern of it suddenly being another obligation of public office, but.
Not really a question,
I guess, yeah.
Any further questions? Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, we discussed this just briefly prior to convening, so I would see if I've truly understood it. And I thought I did, and I liked it because it just simplified it. It was only adding elected officials to the roster. And I thought it was simple, I thought it was neat, and I really liked it. But now, I have a question. interesting enough what committees will do for you. So the question I have, Representative Clayman, is we talked to elected officials, and I like that. But I think I'd be more comfortable if it's talked about elected officials who serve in a government capacity, state or local. We talked about the tribal consortiums a little bit, but now I'm going clear down to elected officials for utility companies, co-ops. Them are elected officials. I guess you would classify that, not run through division. So help me out with that, if you would, please.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, in section one of the bill, subsection four on page two, it references elective public office. And I know when we drafted the bill, the intent was to make it an actual public office, and I think that elective office in, say, the Chugach Electric Cooperative would actually not be considered public office. That would technically be a corporate office. And I think that because of that use, this may be slightly different than what I responded to the chair earlier, but I think that the use of the word public office means that tribal government wouldn't be a public office in the same way.
Follow up?
Thank you. That does it for me. That's what I want. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you. Thank you.
Any further questions, Representative Birch?
Do we have any idea how many folks pay the $25? And yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it's not a big number. And whose budget does that come out of if they don't have to pay the $25 anymore? Is that I don't know who you get a permit from.
Through the chair to Representative Birch, I'm going to defer that to Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Courts.
Nancy, would you be free to take a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the court system. And because the courts are the people who, A, perform many ceremonies that are non-religious, that is the judges and or law clerks or magistrates, and issue the marriage commissions that you spoke of earlier, I do have that. Each marriage that we perform costs $25 according to our filing fees. And last year we had about 650 marriages. It's varied from about 600 to 650 per year. And for each of those we collect $25. In addition, for marriage commissions in 2016 we issued about 1,678 of them. Each of those are individuals who come and pay $25 to have the authority to marry a friend, and we issue them that commission. Those fees, those $25 times those numbers, are collected by the court, but they're deposited directly into the general fund. The court doesn't retain any of its filing fees, and that general fund money goes to you, and you appropriate it as you see fit.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, let's see, I'm doing the quick math here. 1,600 times 25, 20 bucks is 3,200? 4,000? Yeah, 4,000 bucks. Yeah, so it's not, yeah. Yeah, $4,000. So, 1,600 commissions, and then there's 600 licenses? Or what was the 600 number?
Sorry, about 650 times a judge or law clerk or magistrate marries somebody in their black robe up there.
Okay.
You can always come in and have that done, and we perform that service.
Okay, cool. So, 1,600, about 2,200 total that are kind of outside the religious realm, if you will. And Okay. Very good. Thanks.
Any further comments, Ms.
In short, Representative Birch, this won't affect our budget at all. We don't keep the money.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. Further questions for the sponsor, Representative Wall?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Ms. Mead. Nancy.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I missed it. The 600 marriages that are conducted at the courthouse, those are $25 each. Is that what you said, or are they free?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, those are $25 each as well.
Follow up?
No, I think I got it.
Representative Johnson.
This is for the sponsor.
Is Representative Clayman, are you available to take a question?
At your service.
He is at your service, Representative Johnson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I can kind of go one way or the other on this, although it's not something that I really think we want to, in my opinion, add to the duties of elected officials. But I guess, and the reason being is because I don't know exactly why we need this. I've done this as I've done marriages. People show up with their papers, and you sign them, and off they go. And it's basically any elected official could already do it for $25. They put in $25, and so I'm having a hard time seeing the need for it.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I would suspect that when you were asked by family or friends to perform a marriage during your time as Mayor of Palmer, that was actually something you really enjoyed doing, and that you didn't do that because you sort of were burdened, but they were people that you were really proud to participate in that ceremony. And in the world of how does government function, it strikes me that having to say to a friend, a neighbor, a relative, oh, you're coming to Alaska to get married, or you're in Alaska getting married, or you would like me to perform it because for whatever reason you appreciate. But before I can do that, even though I was elected and swore to uphold the Constitution and uphold the laws of the state, go down to the courthouse and pay $25 and spend whatever time you need to do waiting in line to get a piece of paper that says I can perform this ceremony. And I think that for purposes of government being friendly and accessible to the public, it's reasonable for people that are elected officials that we would like them to think positively about us, that to have to say to them, well, I can do this, but you have to go through an extra hoop to have me do this. But if you go down to the church down the street, you don't have to go through any hoops. I think it's a consumer friendly bill.
And at this time, I think we may be migrating into discussion and debate. And what I'd be interested in doing is opening public testimony at this time, see if anyone is able to testify. And when we take this up, the sponsor on Saturday will be available, and we can also debate the merits of the bill, unless, Representative Johnson, you have a burning question for the sponsor.
I guess my big question would be I won't drift off into debate, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. That's the procedure you described is not exactly how it exactly worked, but I just don't know what problem we're trying to solve. It seems like we're going through some motions here, and I don't know that we have a problem before, so we're trying to solve. So that would be my question, is what brought this up, and what problem are we solving?
Through the chair, I think it's the same thing. I think part of our job in government is to look for ways for government to work more effectively and efficiently for the public. And I, just as I would prefer when people go down to DMV to get their license renewed that they don't have to wait 3 hours, I think when people are getting married, if ways that we can make it easier for them to go through that is a positive.
Just expand, Mr. Fleer, please.
Sure. One last question, comment from Representative Johnson, and we'll move to public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My point is that you do not have to go wait to get a form and fill out and spend money before you do the procedure. So I just wanted to make that clear that we're not fixing a we got to wait in line before we get married problem.
Thank you. And Representative Clem, if you'd like to respond, you're welcome to. At this point in time, I'm going to open public testimony, and I don't see anyone online, and I see a shaking head from the back of the room. If there's anyone in the room who'd like to testify, now is your time. Seeing none, online or in the room, I'm going to close public testimony, and at this time, hold House Bill 20, and it's... my hope that we can hear this again on our Saturday hearing, hear all perspectives debate and discuss and potentially move. And at this time, I'd like to move to the last item on today's agenda, House Concurrent Resolution 5 from Representative Eastman. Thank you, Representative Clayman and Ms. Perman, for the presentation, being available for questions. And I believe we have an actual PowerPoint presentation. Representative Eastman and Mr. McClure, you're welcome to come forward if you'd like. Or we can take a brief ideas to get the computers into compliance. Record, and we're on the last item for today's agenda, House Concurrent Resolution 5, related to the uniform rules and the Committee on Committees. Representative Eastman, please proceed with your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Eastman, State Representative for House District 10 in the Mat-Su Valley, and it is a privilege to come before you today to talk about House Concurrent Resolution 5, which would be a change to our uniform rules. For my sponsor statement, you can see that the premise of this is very straightforward. House Concurrent 5, Resolution 5 ensures the presiding member of each legislative body has the authority to appoint a sufficient number of members to the Committee on Committees. What this rule does is it takes us back to one of our duties as legislators. One of the things that we do as a legislature each term is we determine the rules that we will follow as a legislature, both the House and the Senate concurring. And while we can determine any rules that we choose to follow, there are literally no limitations on how we might amend or change those rules every 2 years. It's important to remember that the public has a part to play in that process, because when we do decide the rules to follow, we let that be known to the public. And then we have every right and expectation for the public to hold us to it. So looking at historic precedent, this was one of the issues that has come up. I know on the floor last week, our majority leader mentioned the value in going back to rules and understanding, you know, what the original rules were and how they might apply to us today. So let me start with my presentation and walk you through a couple of brief slides. Can we adjust the lighting just so that you might be able to see that?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. What you have before you is a brief snapshot over the last many years from the House Committee on Committees membership, from 1975 to the present time. Historically, up until 1993, the House membership was always at 5. You can see since 1993 to the present, it's always been more than 5. Sometimes it's been 6, sometimes it's been 7. Most recently, it's been 7. By comparison, the Senate membership over the same period of time has maintained a very steady and consistent 5 membership. And one of the questions might be, well, why is that? So the text that you have before you in the bill relates to the very first paragraph of Rule 1, Section E of the Uniform Rules. I will read the portion that's going to change. Currently, it says the presiding officer shall announce not later than the day following election the appointment of a committee on committees consisting of 5 members, including the presiding officer. To a member of the public, that sets an expectation that committee will consist of 5 members. As you can see, and as we just talked about, currently when that member of the public goes onto the legislature's website, they will find that 7 members are listed. And that gives rise to the question of what's the difference, and is this something that the legislature wants to change so that there are 7 members or perhaps more than 5 reflected. And hence the presentation before you is an attempt to bridge the gap between what the public expectation is and what the legislature determines through you as a committee on what is going to be most effective and in the public's best interest. I don't have anything else other than to answer your questions, so thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Eastman. I should note there's an amendment in the offing from Representative Knopp, And maybe at this time I'll ask Ms. Gilardi, the committee aide, to distribute that to the members. Pending distribution and how that relates to the concurrent resolution in front of us, are there any questions from the committee for Representative Eastman? Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Eastman, so in a minute here we're going to get a look at the proposed amendment. And in that proposed amendment, it's proposing to change to seven members, not five. And in your proposal here, it's looking like you're trying to insert the words at least five. But if the current rules say committee consisting of five, and if you're comfortable with five, why are we inserting the words at least? Because your intent is to make the rules consistent with the uniform rules as far as proportional. Am I missing something there, sir? Or, I mean, if we deleted the words at least and I did not move my amendment to increase it to seven, is the language okay? That portion of it is all I'm referring to. And was that clear as mud for you, sir?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I don't have the amendment in front of me, but from what I understand, you want to change five to seven. Is that the gist of it?
So let me just briefly explain the amendment through the chair. So when this was brought to me, my attention, I was asked to, on page 1, line 12, and
did he receive an amendment?
I haven't, yes.
Okay. So in page 1, line 12, I was asked to have the words "and the committee" on committees somewhat defined in there. They wanted that inserted, and I was willing to do that. So what happened when I went to legislative legal to confirm that the verbiage was appropriate, they recommended that I change it to seven, not five, because that's currently what we have on there. So they had recommended we move to seven. Although I understand the Senate has five in theirs, and the current language, if I read it, does say five. You were trying to insert the words "at least," and I'm not comfortable with "at least" because then you're all over the place. So I'm comfortable with a firm number. And so what I'm trying to do, Mr. Chair, is not complicate this thing, and I'm trying to ask Mr. Eastman that, does it currently state five and we could leave it at five?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, certainly we could leave the rule as is. I think the question that immediately arises is, our current presiding officer has chosen to appoint seven members to that committee, and if we anticipate that continuing on as a historic trend and that continuing, then I think there probably does need to be some attention to the rules to give the presiding officer that authority. So the purpose of my amendment is not to restrict the presiding officer, but to give them the authority to make whatever determination they think is in the best interest of the body. Now, I think you will have a conflict if you change it to seven. My anticipation and expectation is that those in the Senate will wonder why they're required now to have seven members out of 20, which is a very large portion of their body. Okay. I think if you leave it flexible so that each chamber gets to decide, you resolve that potential conflict.
Follow up?
Just to clarify, I misspoke earlier. Ledge Legal didn't request seven. They just wanted it to be specific, not flexible. That was their request. So they didn't want the "at least." They either wanted it five or seven. So I'm not sure what the chair's intent is. I probably won't move this amendment today, probably at the next hearing date. But at that time, I would suspect I will come back and try to delete the words "at least" and make it specific.
Thank you. At this time, I see there is Linda Bruce from Legislative Legal on the line, although I'm not sure if she's still on the line. She's not. Okay. And we can try to have someone from Legislative Legal available at the next hearing for perspective. And we can hold the amendment and maybe get to it at the next hearing. But are there, for the time being, further thoughts for the sponsor or questions? Representative Birch.
I guess it's a proportionality. I think if I recall looking at your slides there,
and just trying to understand the composition of the there's basically, if you will, two minority members out of the seven. And if I'm reading through this, if you go 18 out of 40 minority percentage of the majority times seven, that equals 3.15 members, and there's only two members on this body. So does that require then a restructuring, or does that require the president to basically reassign people on the committee and committees? I just don't know.
Through the chair, Representative Birch. So as the legislation you have before me, this would not affect representation on the committee other than the total number of the committee. Now, it's my understanding from talking with those in the Senate, they have historically maintained a minority representation, and that would fall within the expected proportion in the uniform rules for standing committees. Yeah, it's important to note, though, that as the uniform rules currently read, it's the standing committees that are required to have that proportional representation. Special committees or the committee on committees don't, by rule, fall under that. Though I think you'll see historically that there are certainly members on the minority that serve on those committees, and I think that's expected to continue forward. Now, the amendment before you would change that and would make it a rule that those minority members were entitled to representation on the committee on the committees as well.
Follow up, Representative Birch.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to understand if it's going to require a change up on the committee if this is proposed. Actually, it almost looks like it'd be. Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't have five members on the committee right now. We've got seven, right? Okay. So it's basically out of balance right now.
I think that might be the intent of the sponsors to resolve that.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, there is some out of balance, as you say, but I think the primary effort is to simply set the expectation and bring the public along in what that expectation is. And then I, as a sponsor, don't have great passions in terms of how the committee, you know, ends up being represented. But currently, if you were to treat the Committee on Committees as a standing committee, it would require two members from a minority. If it was a five-member committee, if it was seven, it would require three.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd like to belatedly recognize Vice Chair Tuck arrived at 3:48, and thank you for House Bill 3.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Any other questions for the sponsor for HCR 5? Seeing none, I believe, unless Representative Wohl has a question, seeing none, we'll hold HCR 5 now, and we can attend to amendments in the next hearing, and I hope move the concurrent resolution at that time. The next meeting for State Affairs is Saturday, February 16th at 11 a.m. We have House Bill 44 and House Bill 13, as well as two bills held over from today for Saturday. We also have a finance subcommittee today at 4:30. And with that, at 3:54 p.m. today, we're adjourned. Thank you.